Sazly Books Radio. Putting the world to rights.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sazmic Radio with myself, Michael Feely, and my co-host, Paul Mamagalian. Sazmic Radio was created in conjunction with Sazmic Books Publishing to help authors and potential authors like you to get a louder voice and a wider platform. So if there are any authors or potential authors out there, we'd love to hear from you at sazmicbooks.com. Now, this evening's guest is fascinating, to say the least. We met probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago at an event we put on locally, or at least attended, and it's safe to say that our passion and our research has taken us to the same place. We are hitting the same target, just not necessarily with the same arrows. The message of this evening is the esoterical meaning of words, going back to the ancient language of Sanskrit. And from that, this evening's guest has made many biblical translations, and she's absolutely fascinating. So without further ado, welcome to this evening's guest, Rosie. Welcome to the show, Rosie.
Hello, Mick. How are you? I'm Paul.
We're not too bad, thank you. Thank you very much for being here. And how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Are you?
Yep, not bad at all. It's nice and sunny here, so that's always nice.
Same for you.
Excellent. And where about in the UK are you actually calling from?
In Derbyshire.
In Derbyshire, not too far from where I am. So just tell us a little bit about yourself then before we sort of get into the crux of the subject this evening.
Right, well, I started with the word side of things a few years ago. And what a lot of people tend to is look in dictionaries. And again, it's not going back far enough to original meanings. So everybody says, you know, there's something wrong with the world, but it's getting to the crux of really what's wrong with the world, but what's wrong with us as well. And I decided then to look at the Bible, began to read it, and I think I got to the judgments in Exodus, and it just didn't really make much sense in today's language. So I thought, well, hold on a minute, in the beginning. And so in the beginning, it must be the first languages or language. So what I did is quite a bit of research on the history of languages and taking it back. And therefore began my journey of taking keywords of the first five books of the Bible back to Sanskrit and Proto-Indo-European. And it's absolutely mind-blowing what that book, the most important book in the world, is telling us. And so really, if I go back a little bit further than that, I was looking down all sorts of routes. But I believe, you know, at the time I was going the wrong way. And there's only one route really to go. And that's to follow the correct path of what that's saying. Now, when you look at some films, yes, there's The Matrix out there, 1, 2, and 3. The third Matrix film a few years ago, I didn't get that at all, but oh boy, I do now. And if it's, is it the Shavosky brothers, whether it be them or whoever's at the back of that, knows exactly what that Bible is telling us in the Sanskrit Proto-Indo-European language. And then you start looking at films like Immortal, or Immortals, I think it's called, and Lucy, that's a fairly recent one, Jupiter Ascending. And I just, once I'd studied it, and not only did I do the translations, and I'd sort of study my own work, I'd go a bit backwards then, and then really study what I put together. But what I found fascinating was when I was doing these translations, I started off thinking, is this really going to make any sense? And the sentence has just flowed, absolutely flowed. And that's what's brought me to the, you know, the point I'm at now. And what I can say is by the journey that I've taken and the studying that I've done on this particular route, it brings a peace within. And I think that's so important, that we need that peace within, not anger, not resentment, but that peace that I think I found through the knowledge I've gained. So I hope that's made sense.
It certainly has. And when you said that you've always felt that there was something wrong with the world, what did you think that was, and why do you think you actually had that feeling?
I couldn't really say when it started, but I think for many, many years, probably even going back to school, you just know there's something wrong, and there's the whole attitude of some people are wrong. I mean, how many people have either had a friend, if we just start at the basics, or a relative, for want of a better expression, has done the dirty on them, and they thought they could trust that person. So that person, I use the word person, but, you know, it's only a word at the end of the day, but they then become alien to us. And you know, there's another saying there, their behaviour was alien to me. And what we become upset by is deviousness, mistrust. So you have to look at, it starts from people in general. And I think it's always best to start at the root of something than, I don't know, halfway up the mountain or at the top. You know, let's get to the roots of what's wrong. And I don't know, this is just off the top of my head, but I think that you could look at, I don't know, 50, 60% of the population really can, that same showing the true colours when certain situations arise. For instance, a bereavement, that can cause arguments, upset by others' behaviour. And I think that's where it really, really needs to start, from within. And I think that, I mean, I'm going back to some studying I've done, you know, now. And it's going back to, I found some old books in this old rickety bookshop. And they're about, oh gosh, old, 50, 60 years old. And there's something, you know, stuff about the Egyptians in it and the design of the pyramids. And with studying the Bible, I found that interesting. I'll get to that in a little while. But in one of the books, it was speaking about, I think it was just either just hitting the Sumerian period or just prior to that. And everybody, apparently, was under divine law. And let's say, for instance, there was, I don't know, somebody pinched somebody's apple from somebody's garden, and they got them before the elders, and did you pinch that apple? No, I didn't, but they really did. Well, here's the divine book, you know, take an oath under that. They would be petrified. Yes, yeah, I did, I took the apple. But what started to happen, apparently, was that people started to branch off and become, that's where the saying comes from, a law unto themselves. You know, I don't need this divine law. I can be a law unto myself, do what I want, I don't have to follow that. And what happened was they had to bring a system in called Lugal. And I think the king was Lugas or something along those lines. But so this Lugal system, for the ones that weren't under divine law, obviously eventually became legal. So one of our ancestors at some point, however many years ago, decided to break away and follow that, you know, follow the law unto themselves. And that just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that's the root of it all.
Okay, and obviously you've come into some sort of deep esoteric meanings. Do you think you actually chosen to do it, or is it something that you've actually chosen yourself? I mean, is there anything that you can sort of tell us in relation to how that came about?
Well, it was quite strange how it came about. No, I wouldn't say I chose it. Sort of a feeling within, but the interesting part was for 2 weeks, this is prior to beginning the, or getting this idea in my head from somewhere about, you know, that to start on the translations or looking at the Bible, I had 6 dreams, 3 1 week, 3 the following week, exactly the same. And in the dream, there was 3 gentlemen, I couldn't quite see the other two on either side of the main man because they were facing sideways but facing him. And they had on a light cream robe, and the material was superb, that's all I can say. And I couldn't see any seams, anything in these long sort of round neck gowns with the sleeves. Sort of came down into a V, and the gentleman in the middle, all I felt was wisdom, knowledge, serenity, peace, but a very, very supreme figure. And they were above me. Now, I couldn't tell you whether they were tall or they maybe stood on some platform, because I was sort of quite close up in this dream, but I can't remember whether it's their height or they were on some sort of platform. But, and I know we've been chatting for some while, but all I can remember is the final part of the dream is, now I'm going to tell you everything. And that everything, I think, was obviously concerning the Bible. But for some strange reason, I thought after these dreams I was going to get all this stuff automatically. But oh boy, did I have some work to do. And I'm glad I had the work to do, because I was learning on the way, you know. And I've never had the dream since. There were two or three occasions where, because it was very, very difficult at times, so one word in particular took me mulling over it over 3 days. But what I learned to do was, I can't get this, send it up, so to speak, and then it would come in one way or another. But there were two or three times that I actually thought it was taking every spare hour, a lot of concentration, and I thought I can't do this anymore. It's a bit too much. I think I've taken a bit too much on here. But there's just something inside. You've got to keep going. You have got to finish this. And hence, that's where I am now.
Yeah. Now, saying that nothing ever comes sort of easy and automatic, you need to work for it, but it takes a special kind of persistence and willpower and strong mindedness to actually continue in the face of adversity and all the strains that it puts you under. But who do you actually think these people were in the dreams? Were there some kind of elders or sort of galactic council, or who do you think they may have been?
Do you know, I really don't know. It all I got was that feeling. They were very, very superior to me. But it was that wisdom and knowledge and I suppose I was a little bit in awe as well. But I couldn't honestly say I know, because I don't. All I can go on is what I felt at the time.
And also, I believe that at sort of round about the same time, you were having other strange occurrences happening above your house and around your facility.
Oh, yeah, that was about a month before I finished the book, and the very first time I can remember. It was evening, and I just got this feeling to look outside. And I looked, and I thought, I'm sure I've just seen something across the sky then. It was a bit one of those moments. Not a great deal happened, really. But after that, it was regular. Things moving above the house, like something that would look like a star. And then all three would start moving, and then whoosh, off they'd gone. The most memorable was I got in the habit then of going outside and having a look. This one particular night, there was two huge orange glows. Not Chinese lanterns, way too big for that. And they were coming towards the house. We'd get to a certain point, and then they went off left. Two more came, went off left. So I actually shouted my son to come and have a look, and he saw the third pair come along, turn left. But then his jaw dropped, and he's saying to look at something else, which I couldn't see because of this wall. And then it came past the house, and we were both just stood there, transfixed, really. And all I can describe it as was, again, orange. But I know this sounds a bit cliche, but cigar-shaped, huge thing. And it was, about after a couple of, I don't know, minutes maybe of watching this, my son got his phone out and videoed the as it was going off. But it doesn't come through as good, I don't think, on a video. The other time was after that, and I saw some lights in the sky, and they were blue, red, and white. First, I wasn't sure if it was a low-flying plane, but as it got closer, I realised it wasn't, and it was again some cliche big triangular-shaped object craft, really. And these lights were going, and it was that low, it looked as if it skimmed the roof of the house. Now, I didn't hear a sound. There was no breeze from it. There was nothing. And I honestly thought there was going to be in the newspapers or the local paper the next day, loads of talk about this craft that had flown over the area. Nobody else saw it. But I get regular things like that over the house now. I've got a bit used to it. not as big as that, but, you know, that was one of the biggest. And that I don't know. I don't know. What but it was a month before I finished the book that all began to happen.
And you think it was all connected to the book or what was coming through?
I think so, because why would that all start about a month before the book finished? And just popping back to the big cigar orange shaped object that came past the house, and I'm really sorry, I've forgotten the gentleman's name, but there's a UFO magazine. It's quite well known, and I've forgotten his name. It's gone. But he was really, and he actually put it in one of his, I think he brings the magazine out once a month, and he put that in there. He couldn't explain it either.
No, I think, is it Gary Heseltine or, yeah?
Oldish gentleman. Completely forgotten his name. But it was I'm trying to think what month it went in. But yeah, he put it on, I think it was on the back page, put it on.
I certainly think when we do shows like this, and certainly have discussions on the farm like we have done, it certainly puts into perspective that the fact that, you know, you're not alone and you're actually not going mad. I mean, all the things that you've just described, myself and Sarah and my wife have also seen the exact same things as well.
Wow.
We've seen in the middle of daylight, we've seen the, you know, three massive, absolutely massive cigar-shaped UFO with the brothers. They could have only been about 400 feet in broad daylight. And again, you would expect it to be like a scene from an alien film when everybody dumps the cars and just starts walking towards. Okay. But nobody other than the two of us could see them. We've also seen the massive orange glow that you described as well. We've also seen the ones that look, well, masquerade as stars. And because I do quite a lot of watching the sky and looking at constellations and stars, you tend to sort of get a knowledge of what should be there and what shouldn't. So many times I've looked up in the sky and thought, that star wasn't there last night. And then all of a sudden it's moved. And then two other stars have moved with it and they've sort of gone along the sky. And I think that sort of around a couple of years ago, we sort of came to the conclusion that maybe there's some kind of scout ships or something like that. We've seen dimensional gateways open up in front of us and in the sky and craft come out of them. We've also been present to what we do believe, even to this day, where it was some kind of alien landing, where it was just a really, really sort of eerie, not in control feeling. And there was manhole covers blowing up into the sky, there was explosions underground, and one of the local UFO groups actually investigated it, and they contacted the electricity board, and then they were vexed as well, saying, you may get one or two incidents in one evening, but not nine in the space of a couple of hours, you know. Some of the listeners may not know, but myself and Sarah were police officers, and it was on one of our... We are now ex-police officers, but it was actually on one of our night shifts, and I do swear by everything that we own, and we know that it wasn't an alien landing that evening. There were people calling up saying there were shadows and things walking in their garden. And we were actually there at the time, and we couldn't see anything. We'd leave the Guardian And then the same people will call up and say, you know, the prowl out or whatever's back. And it must have been a dimensional thing because nobody else could see them. And these things are happening. And they're happening all around us. And some people are actually in tune and some are not.
Yeah, because the bit I found was the eyes were seeing it. It was so close. And it was registering in the head, you know. I mean, I'll be honest with you, with the stars, and I wouldn't know which one should be where, but I was just, wow, what is happening? You know, and then to get a little bit used to it. Yeah, but if you told some people these things, they'd look at you as if, you know, you'd lost the plot, so to speak.
And we have, and they did.
And it's, you know, so it's, you know, as you say, which, and I can honestly say what I've seen is 100%, you know, the truth, because you think, well, no need to make that up, is there really?
Well, there isn't, and you know, when you see with your physical eyes or you sense it, you know there's something there, and then there's so many different things that I've personally seen as well that convince me and tell me that there's something else going on. And when you actually realise that human beings see less than 1% of the frequency spectra, it just poses the question, well, what's in that 99%+ that we don't see? And just occasionally we tune in and we get a glimpse, and it's the kind of things that you and I have just described.
Right, because the only other strange thing that happened, but that was before I started the book, before the dreams, and there's a corner near where I live, and I was just driving down towards it, and you have to sort of turn, you know, and the road veers right, and if you go left, there is a turning, but there's grass and, you know, pavement and everything, so you have to sort of do a bit of a manoeuvre. And I was just driving down there, as you do, and there was this blinding white light. Now, I say blinding white light, I was still looking into it, and I can actually remember going, ooh, you know, as you do. And it was in broad daylight. I know it sounds a bit silly now, but because that was taking my attention up for those however many seconds, I know I didn't take my foot off the accelerator. I didn't brake. I was in sort of a, gosh, what's going on? And then it went, and I was in the exact same place. Now, by rights, I should have been over the pavement, over the grass, you know. I have no idea what that was all about, but it was, you know, it was a strange one. Maybe you can explain that one.
Also, we've seen, I mean, myself and a friend were in a local park one evening, and we'd actually taken lots of photographs of orbs that had been following us around, and we believe that they were potentially lost souls. And we asked for them to be released to wherever they should be, because when you look into earthbound spirits and things like that, they are actually trapped in a reality that they don't belong in anymore. And sometimes they need assistance. And Sarah just bought, she had a sort of an internal feeling that she needed to get some kind of decent camera phone leading up to this. And the park was pitch black. You couldn't see more than 2 or 3 feet ahead of you, but it was thick forest. Okay. And as we asked for these souls, or whether it was to be released or assisted in some kind of way, this beautiful, bright, white light opened up in front of us. In fact, it was so bright that it hurt the eye to actually look at it. And it was probably at ground level, and its width was about 20, 30 feet. So was its height. And it opened up in front of us, and Sarah's camera actually took a picture of it itself without her doing it. And we do actually have that picture. I can actually send it to you. And it opened up probably for about 5-6 seconds. And after that, we did feel that the area around us had actually been cleansed in some kind of way. And we do believe that that was some kind of dimensional gateway. which again, if you look into electromagnetism and things like that, and when you look at negative spin and reverse spin, you can actually create gateways and openings in the electromagnetic field, which lead to other dimensions and gateways. And we do actually believe that that may have been what happened that night.
Gosh, it's fascinating, isn't it, really, when you start to look at it at the angles that we've come from, like you're saying, different journeys. But because in the Bible, when you get to the translations, it's actually mentioning in there about frequencies, vibrations, and because this is just me, from what the work I've done, I don't believe there are any people in the Bible. It was just stories put into place, but they had to stick to the original meaning. And I'll just give you an example. Is Noah the Ark. So we grow up with this man in a boat and what have you. But when you translate Noah in the Ark, Noah used to be, or used to mean, going back, you know, again, was mental peace, mental covenant. And Ark, A-R-K, was changed from A-R-C, which was Ark, which they used to call many years ago electric pale amber. And then it goes back to pale gold, etc., which when you get to the original meaning of that, actually meant three parts gold, one part silver. And three is, let me think now. It's ascend in the mind, gold, and have a separate voice. That's where silver spoon in the mouth comes from, all that type of thing. People think silver spoon in the mouth means you're rich, and they link it to material things. But its original was you were rich in speech and thought. And again, when when you start to look at what it was saying, and when it said about the flood, what we're doing is reading this book in today's dictionary. Some people have taken it back to Latin, Greek. Well, if something's from in the beginning, it needs to go back to the beginning, or as close as. And flood, when you take that word back, used to mean dominion. So that, you know, it was the dominance. And when he sent the turtle, you know, in the story, to send the turtle dove was, you know, now it's peace, but back then it was corruption. So, and when it didn't come back, you know, that was all well and good, because thou shalt not commit adultery. Today adultery, have an affair, etc. But you take it back. The odd words have got lost in time. But you take adultery back. Adultere, and you take that back. It was corruption that it accident. So don't be corrupt. So people can turn around and say, oh well, you know, I don't know, in that the head of government is corrupt. Now, what is corrupt? Because and this is where we get to what the pyramids were trying to tell us, because when you look at the design of the pyramid, if you turn too quickly to the right, see the right, I think it's the right, too quickly to the right, you will fall down into the subterranean chamber. Now, right and left today, but right many moons ago was belief, and left was learned, what you're knowledgeable of. So what they're saying is believe too quickly, and to be too quick to believe. And the subterranean chamber was the definition of hell. Journey of the dead and all that, because death back then was the senseless, the stupid. And when you look at the translations of the Bible, what it's saying is connect that vibration to that. Some Lord, the name, you know, the name doesn't matter, that supreme being energy out there, because it's telling you, if you don't and you cross Jordan, which was again an old saying for crossing into the underworld, to the senseless, the corrupt, the stupid, you know, thou shalt not have any other gods before me. A god was an inner vibration. So what it's saying is, I could take it, you know, before me. Before was existing mind, that's where you get forehead. And me, and this is where name comes in, what's your name? Nah-me. And nah-me, nah was no, and me is what the Sumerians used to call, the me's were the divine laws. So no divine law. And off you go, you're a law unto yourself. Or you let others become your God. People can portray to be this, that, and the other. But what it's saying is that vibration needs to be connected to the, you know, big gaffer, where, you know, but we're like radios. And this is where you look at the film Lucy, and I think she's sat in the car, and there's all different colours, vibrations coming off of people's heads. Somebody's on the phone, they're all over the place. Connecting everywhere, you know. But we should be connecting to that, just that one. So those two become one. And jealousy, resentment, corruption, you name it. Anything that, you know, will twist that dial on the radio, connect to that, you've lost it again. I don't know if I'm, you know, making sense along these lines, but what the Bible is actually telling us when you translate it is, there's more than 10 commandments. And when you look at the judgments, you know, it's saying about ass and ox and everything else, but they're all definitions. So you take it right back. And there's actually one in there when it's translated. It says, as you believe, so shall you be judged by. And I think... what was it the Pope said, we welcome aliens or something, because while ever we're not connected or wanting to learn and follow divine law, I believe we're just classed as alien, you know. It's and there's part in the Bible that said along the lines of, you know, if that not connected breaks the necks. It doesn't mean, you know, go up to something, break the net. It's an old saying for, we call it lost the plot now. Where's the head at? It's just saying, this is where all these sayings, you know, derive from. Somebody said to me, oh gosh, I'm not doing, the Muslim holy book, the Quran. And they said, oh, that's a violent book. It said to chop the heads off. Again, it's going back to the same thing. They've lost the plot. We call it lost the plot now. You know, all the different sayings. But it's telling us quite plainly in there as well that if you're not connected to that vibration that you should be connected to, this is where you get it says you will live under a torturous order. And what it's meaning by that, when you cross Jordan, it means you've gone into the torturous order. How many times do people worry about, am I going to get that job? Am I going to get that house? Oh, I don't know. There's all sorts of things. And it's let it be. If you're connected properly to that supreme vibration, that will sort life out for you. Now, people can think, well, do you know it's going to sort life out for me? Again, doubt. Now, because I've done this studying and I've wanted to connect, but I've also felt as I've connected as best as I can. It's hard to explain, but it's like, I get it, you know. And I've just put my life in that supreme power time. Because how many times when we've tried to do it ourselves, something always goes blooming wrong, you know, or it doesn't quite work out the plan. And then we worry, and worry is torture. And it's saying to you, you know, you go down there, you know, and that's how you're going to live. Now, before anything else, if people just think, you know, I don't know, you woke up one morning, you haven't got a clue what your name is, what's it matter anyway, but who are you? Who are you? And look at bits you'd like to improve and which path you want to go down. It, you know, life's not all about shouting and arguing and everything else. And, you know, people might be listening now and thinking, I don't agree with what she's saying. Absolutely fine. You know, it's my journey and I quite like this journey. So a lot of things have made sense to me now. And I feel so much, I feel better in myself, I feel at peace in myself. Because instead of trying to run around like a headless chicken, as you do on the other side, and worrying about things and doing this, that and the other, what I find now is I don't order things, because that's not my place. I can't order some supreme being, excuse me, you know, can I have this? But I've put my life, connected it in their hands. And you feel so much better in yourself when you do that. I don't worry now.
do you think that it's your sort of knowledge that you've been directed to find? Do you think that has given you that reconnection? Or to, again, working with words, you know, is that understanding giving you a better way of standing under what these divine vibrations?
Yes, and I think as well that there can be some lovely people out there that's never read the Bible, never, you know, but they're just automatically connected. But I think what we do, as we're growing up, we start letting a few other vibrations take over, and I don't mean all negative, but I don't know where you should be going in life, what you should be doing, you know. And again, I shall have no other gods before me, don't have any other inner vibrations before me. And sometimes, you know, you've heard people say, do you know, I just knew everything was going to be all right. And I don't know why, but I just knew. And that's when that connection's come in. And that's really how we should hope to try and feel all the time. And, you know, people might say, well, there's some really bad things happen down here. Yes, there is. Now, I'm no expert on this. But is it a case that we are sent back here time and time again until we keep evolving, evolving. So eventually we don't have to come back to learn any more lessons. I don't know.
Based on what? Again, based on what we've sort of learned and then researched and actually experienced, I think that statement is quite correct. I think when we speak about vibrations and universal vibrations, and you have fantastic scientists like Nikola Tesla and Albert Einstein that tell you that the universe is vibration, it's sound, it's light and frequency. And I think in terms of ourself, we can only operate in a vibratory sort of environment that we're compatible with.
Yeah.
And I think when you've actually worked on that inner vibration that you just spoke about, I think you get to a certain extent where you're no longer compatible with the vibration of the 3D Earth. And I think when that becomes the case, that's when you do actually go elsewhere, and you can only go to where you're compatible with. And if that's not a three-dimensional Earth, then I think you will go somewhere else next time, and I think you will keep coming back here until you've actually worked on yourself sufficiently to make yourself incompatible with this low vibration.
I think definitely there's something, because I told you the story last week about when I was five, and I went to a Catholic school, and obviously you have your St. Peter, St. Paul, but in the reception or first year, whatever they call it now, then that you were put into planetary groups, Mars, Moon, Venus, Jupiter, and I can remember clearly as a 5 year old stood there, absolutely fingers crossed, everything, and I was, please let me be in Jupiter. I've got to be in Jupiter. I couldn't go in any other one. Anyway, you know, thrilled to bits when the teacher put me in the Jupiter group. So then it comes to half term or whatever, and you have to swap round. And I thought, I can't move from Jupiter. And I don't know, she put me in the Moon or somewhere or Mars. I wouldn't go in it. And I went, I kept going up to the teacher and going, I really can't go in another group, I've got to stay in Jupiter. And I should say, well, you have to go in, I don't know, the Moon, whatever. And I would go and do what Jupiter group was doing. And eventually she let me. And I did think over the years, what was that all about? You know, at five.
Yeah, and again, we have sort of similar experiences. And it was fascinating when you said that, because whereas your research has gone into the meaning of words, mine has gone into sort of a genetic and astronomical basis for biblical stories. And the one thing that what Vatican means is universal. And modern-day religions are the worship. It's astrotheology. It's the worship of the seven visible planets. And when you have the likes of Jupiter in the Bible, that is translated as the Jupiter. Mm. And it was just fascinating because that actually fitted a little piece of the puzzle for me as well, sort of a bit of confirmation. The Vatican, the Third Eye, Pineal Gland, that they are actually worshipping the seven visible planets, and that was sort of refreshing.
Yes, because I've contacted various bodies linked to the Vatican, and I've been to see one or two, and I'm not interested in what Joe Blogs on YouTube says, such as, I don't know, they I don't know, fry babies or whatever, because who in the right mind would stand, let's say, in the middle of a city centre, and I don't know, there's 1,000 people on this square, and they go up and they go, what's your view on this? What's your view on that? Is that right? Yeah. Oh, I'll believe then. I've done my own journey and contacted to see if I'm on the right path. And what I can say is that I've been treated with respect, honesty, cups of tea, And I didn't mention, you know, when I was a baby, what I was baptized. I never mentioned what I was baptized as then. Been answered truthfully. Now, I've contacted some other establishments that have ignored me, been a bit rude, and one or two that have acted like, for want of a better expression, mental thugs. So I'm thinking, well, hold on a minute, I've got this side that will meet, will explain, will answer me truthfully, and then there's this bunch here. So that's just my experience of how I was treated. And there were some questions I needed to ask about the New Testament. I won't go into that now. And what I can say was I was answered truthfully again. Because when you look at the codes of canon law, there's a section there that clearly states, and I forget now which bit it is, but it clearly states that the codes of canon law are adhering to the New and the Old Testament. And you look at the codes of canon law, and that's where the right to remain silent came from, things like that. So that's just my experience. And some might not agree with this, but you know, at least I could turn around and say, well, I've faced both sides head on. And that's the experience I've had from that. But again, I think it's either for you or it's not. I don't know whether you agree.
I think it is. I think it shows a great courage to actually challenge. I do actually believe, however, that the people who matter sort of hierarchy within the churches and within the Vatican and within other religions, they understand all this. They understand that what the people get out of Sunday worship is nothing compared to the truth. And I do get the feeling that for those almost to initiate standard, like yourself, I think they will be on the level with you, and they will give you a certain amount of respect because you are at that sort of standard. And if you look back at ancient belief systems with the, you know, the Egyptian mystery schools and initiations, they do believe that knowledge is a privilege, not a right. And I think when somebody just displays the amount of hard work that it does actually take to learn these things, then you are privileged enough to know. And I think on that basis, they would be on the level with you, and they wouldn't try to, smoke screen you with BS and whatever, because you are on the level, you're doing your work. And I do agree with that, and I do think that the hierarchy within religions know exactly what's going on, but the rest of us, the untitled, as the royal family would call us, we just get the breadcrumbs and they get the laugh.
Because it's how can I explain it? I think you're right there, because I've done so much work on this, and I didn't go in with an attitude. There's no need to. It was for a chat. And I found them quite honest. So you think, hold on a minute, this side is actually, they've got time, they're putting time to one side. I'm getting a cup of tea, you know, and I'm sat there asking questions. And I'm getting truthful answers. But I'm not saying that's to say, if somebody goes, you know, like a china shop in there, then maybe they won't have time. I don't know.
I think it's human nature that yeah, again, from previous careers and whatever, somebody actually comes up and talks to you and lets the evidence, lets the knowledge, let the wisdom speak, rather than the, you know, the low-dimensional sort of ego. Going in there, banging the table and smashing windows, you're not going to get anywhere. And that's not just at the Vatican or anywhere else. It's going to be in any walk of life.
Yeah, it is, because I mean, now again, this is only another angle I've looked at things is from the codes of canon law and everything else. Is, you know, I don't know. You look back however many hundred years, and apparently, you know, people being put in stocks. there were children going without food. Some very, very poor standards of living. And from what I can, you know, see is that countries signed up to the the Vatican. And you'll see another thing in the codes of canon law, along the lines of that any acts, again, human rights have come from it. Any acts have got to pretty much adhere to the codes of canon law, but you have to read those very, very carefully. Because there's one, and it's mentioning about custom. Now, you can't tram read these codes of canon law, because custom, what is custom? It's a habit. What's a habit? It's a possession, a conception. So, so you have to really read it carefully. Maybe was that brought in, you know, right, you lot, this is getting beyond a joke. You know, 70% of this lot are like a bunch of savages. We need to protect them from one another. So hey, you countries, get signed up to this, get yourself sorted out. That's what I can, from what I've been looking at and everything else.
And of course, when you look at the Uniform Commerce Code, which is basically a global business that is actually run by the Vatican under maritime law, and maritime comes from law of the sea, which is where, you know, when you go to court, you enter the dock. When you're born, you are birthed on your mother's water with a certificate of manifest, which is your birth certificate. We have such words, again, looking at the meaning of words, we have such things as partnership. So again, that refers to the sea. We have apprenticeship, relationship. Everything refers to ship and the sea. And that's maritime law, which comes from the Vatican and canon law as well. So they do actually control global business.
The other interesting thing is with sea, S-E-A, S-E-E, and, you know, the old C&I and all that, taking that word back was to behold and understand. So, you know, you have to just look at yourself and think, what do I behold and understand? And how can I just tune that in? A little bit better. I mean, hands up, you know, you know, when you're driving, I mean, everybody must be able to put a hands up to this. There are some silly people out there that can make you come out with a few choices. and there can be people out there that, you know, how they behave towards people. You might have a boss that is, you know, when all said and done, a nasty piece of work. And what I do now is quite calmly think, you know that saying, they're on another planet. Their head is consumed and cocooned by something I don't want to be part of. And they've got it. They're vibrating on that 24/7. And you just have to think, you know, thankfully, I'm not on that. Again, wavelength. This is where all these sayings are coming from. So when you look at the sea, the word see, it's a beholding and understanding. And I think it just needs the, I think the big is, if the world could get back into that vibration, that wavelength, or the majority, I don't think you're ever going to get everybody. And one annoying thing I find, and I've got to mention it, is people who take quotes from the Bible and then chuck it to one side. You know, you're fooling nobody. Least of all that supreme, powerful entity, call it what you want, out there. And I think if everybody just started on that would eventually ripple out. And make the world maybe a calmer place. So there's too much anger in the world now, too much conceit, too much jealousy, lies, deceit. and it starts to change by us, because I don't believe we are one. We're divided. And you're going to be divided while everyone on different connections, frequencies, the heartbeats on electricity. We're atoms. Everything's atoms. And we need to get that quantum leap, you know, sorted.
We do. I think we all come from the atom. We do all come from atom. And nuclear fission, the atom became the even, which was obviously splitting the electron from the rib. So it's ionic bonding. So we all are universal materials, and I do think that our divisions, our belief systems, which aid our divisions, were all sort of manufactured by design. And I think the very same people that understand the truths that you're speaking and understand the origins of the words. And when you said earlier that there are now people in the Bible, well, I would concur, because the Bible, the people in the Bible are fictitious. They never existed, and that's why you found that there's now people in the Bible, and I found the same. Whether that's a genetic or planetary or word system, that they are fictitious people. And I think the people who really go back to the ancient Pharisees and beyond that, they know, but they wanted to keep the knowledge. It's called the philosophy of self-aggrandizement, and that basically means influencing things by knowledge and wisdom. But they keep that knowledge and wisdom to the self and give the rest of us what we hear, you know, about Jesus walking on water and feeding the 5,000 with 2 loaves and 5 fishes, which is a zodiac. It's Virgo and Pisces in the zodiac. It's an astronomical thing. So, you know, going back to water and sea, the Latin, the sea is mare, obviously where we get Mary and maritime. And when you get the likes of the constellation of Virgo that appears in certain parts of the world to actually come out of the sea, out of the horizon, you then get the Virgo mare, the Virgin Mary. So it's a very astronomical thing. And there's an underlying theme that people that know this, but most people never look into it or challenge what they're told.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting you should mention that about sort of, you know, Jesus feeding the fish, because again, I won't go into this bit now, but when you look at the translation, fish are cold blooded, and you know, again, they're saying, oh, they're cold, they are very cold, so-and-so is, and again, you know, I think it's trying to turn the loogles back. And with the word Mary, I guess it's a bit slightly different to you. Is that's where the word marry comes from, you know, as in getting married, and it goes back to pledge. So when you look at Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, Joseph an old word for Joseph is Zion, which is belief, pledge, Jesus, law and order. So a belief, a pledge is your law and order. Cross, torturous order. So I think that you've got the what the five books are telling us once translated. And did these religions come about trying to turn people back to where they should be going? I mean, there's a big argument about all religions. Was it really, you know, in the start, people just thinking, oh my life. They're not listening to that. How about we tell them a few things on this, if that will get them back down that route? Because when you look at the 12 tribes of Israel, Genesis chapter 49, and you translate those 12 tribes of Israel, it is just about telling you about every personality on this earth. And you know, there's one that it's saying there'll be the devious and the crooked. There'll be ones that'll just believe anything. And it goes through. Now, there's just one, really, one tribe, so to speak, you should be in, that's Judah, when you translate it. But it's no good pretending. You've got to really want to do it, and you know, if everybody, you know, we're living in the real world now, and if you go to the shop, you know, you need a pound for whatever, £4 of milk, £2 of milk, whatever. But if possessions and wanting loads of money, or ripping somebody off, or I don't know. You get jealous because your next door neighbour's had a new car. You're not ready. You've got to be ready in yourself before you open this gate and start this journey. That's all negative vibration stuff. So while ever that is overpowering you, that there's no point wanting to, you've got to sort yourself out. Some people, don't, you know, maybe they don't want to and they want to stay there. But as people, you know, you get some parents where, you know, so-and-so's doing this, doing that, doing the other. Let's start with your child being happy and not for impressing or anything else. And I think that get disconnected from all that. Where is it getting you? Absolutely nowhere. And you've got to learn to just let it go. What's it matter at the end of the day? Isn't it better that you feel better in yourself and walk towards that positive gate? Isn't it? I say, I don't think there's any point unless people are ready for it. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yes, I think my thoughts, and myself and Paul have discussed this as well, about things that are called energy vampires, and they will create a certain scenario, a certain situation, to get you to react a certain way, and they're actually feeding from that negativity. Mm. And I think you do need to get yourself in order, and I think that starts by not getting involved in gossip, not really caring about gossip, not caring about these little mundane things, because there are bigger things out there. And to be honest, I'm in a situation now where I'm really, really not interested either. and I think, and you know, quite blatantly not interested. Go somewhere else where people are interested in that kind of stuff, because I'm not. And I think when you get to that situation, you don't get drawn into fueling their fire. You just don't get drawn into it. And when you start taking away the oxygen and the heat and the fuel that their fire needs, they go somewhere else because you're no longer a food for them.
This is it, because once you get involved in this, you know, I call it claptrap gossip. Why do you want to connect to that vibration? What's that all about? You know, it's negative stuff. So it's a bit like, I don't know, you're putting yourself in a situation. Why? and there might be people who, I think there's nothing worse when you really hate your job. You know, that can be one of the worst things. But instead of having those thoughts of, I hate this job, you know, I have a think about yourself. Start connecting to that right vibration. It'll get you out of it. Bit of luck, it might put you over the boss you don't like. But, you know, it does happen. It does happen. And I just think that ego, that's another one. Another negative vibration. And you have to look at yourself absolutely open. You know, what are the things I could improve? Like one of mine can be impatient. And I don't mean impatient with everybody. I mean, I don't know. If I wanted something to happen, I'd want it to happen in the next 5 minutes. I don't know. Let's say you've sent off for something and it's going to be 7 days, but I'd want it there the next day. You know, that type of impatience. What's it matter? It'll land when it lands, you know. So you just look at yourself and just think, does that really matter? Does that really matter? No, not really. And if there are things in your life that aren't going too great, I don't think it will really till you let the big gaff, as I call it, take over. And I also think that there's that expression to step back. And I think one of the best ways of stepping back, and I'm a big believer in this, go and sit near water, have a think, a lake or something, you know, something along that size. And have a good think. And remember that when we're speaking, it's all vibrations. It's vibrating from the throat. It's vibrating from the mind, the soul. And we've got to be very careful of what we connect to comes out of the mouth, so to speak, to what we write down. I think, you know, they say, oh, people say, well, capability to be so powerful. Well, you have, but again, not powerful possessions and different things, but until you put that socket, that plug into the correct socket, you'll be running around treading on them. And I've tried not to go too much into the translations because, oh gosh, I could be on all week for that. But pretty much what it's saying is you've got to connect as one. Once you connect as one, you start to follow those commandments, everything automatically. It comes natural. And again, it mentions in Leviticus, it mentions about war. Well, war used to be battles to fight, and it's speaking, it's acting separately. And when you think about it, that's what it is. It's separate thoughts, isn't it? Separate vibrations. Maybe one trying to take the other over. And if you watch the film Immortals, that's pretty much telling you with a silver bow and arrow, the arc on the bow. And you'll see in the Matrix films and different ones aiming for the throat, the head, voice, mind. And as I say, if I went too much into the biblical translations, it might get a little bit too much for people. And I hope, you know, I hope that the very sort of brief outline of it that I've come out with this evening, it, if anything, will hopefully make people think.
Yeah, I think yeah, literally everything does start from questioning and thinking about things. And do you have a title for your book yet?
It's Ancient Translations, Genesis to Deuteronomy. And sorry, I'm just trying to get my copy of the book at the moment. And you know, maybe if I read a bit of the introduction out, I don't know, have we time?
Yeah, absolutely. And then once you've done that, I'll bring Paul in, because I know he has some questions as well. But yeah, please go ahead.
I'll just read a little bit of it out. And this is going a little bit, you know, a little bit into the introduction. How our Supreme Master and Creator must look at people on Earth now. The most supreme knowledge of all is virtually non-existent, and all that remains are small fragmented sections many call, now this is where common law came from, Vulgate, and away you go back. But common law was people just trying to decipher the Bible as best they could. But that's a very, very basic version. In fact, it's lost a bit there now. But anyway, people arguing over their religions, negative division of colour, financial status, belief laws, and the list goes on. Disrespect and the lack of courtesy, compassion, patience, sincerity, help and love. A negative virus of discontent sweeping over the people of this planet we now call Earth. Again, going back, Earth was universe. We live in a primitive age and desperately need to return to being the learned people of times past. And then I go into, a bit further on in the book, is an example of words. And a word I use an example of is, today it's defined as homosexual, gay 50 years ago was happy. But in the 1800s, gay defined a brothel, and in medieval times defined a gallant knight or noble lady. The word gay derives from Proto-Indo-European gel, which equals to rise, a shine, which means to rise separate. Hence, rise separate is the original meaning. And by rising, it doesn't mean you're going to that vibration. You know, where are you rising to? What are you connecting with? So, you know, for instance, I mentioned in the book that when we're at school, we're taught about Shakespeare, you know, Love's My Fair Lady and all that. Oh, and then the teacher will say, and this is what it means today. But we're, you know, the most important book in the world, and we're not. So we're really, I think, you know, that should be paramount in schools today. But as I say, that's just a little bit from the introduction. And I mentioned about, you know, for instance, is it only when one sees an old lady tumble or a crying child lost that there's an immediate connection with that vibration? And you know, why do people blow hot and cold so frequently, connecting, disconnecting? Contained within your body is a transmission so powerful, yet so beautiful, but one's habit is to mainly connect to the cold supply. Maybe this is out of habit or the influence of others. Stop, look deep within yourself at you, faults and all. Concentrate on your faults and practice constantly to correct them, as this is stopping your true connection to that supreme being. And I've gone about circuiting and connecting. That if we all connect to that supreme power, what a fantastic vibrational age we could live in. Anyway, that was just little snippets from the introduction to it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And Paul, do you wish to come into that point at all?
Hi.
Hello.
Rosie.
Hi. Hello.
Brilliant. Well, I've just been just sitting back and listening to it. I really don't really want to have to ask anything, just to let you sort of have the floor, but it's been fascinating to listen to. And you were saying earlier, both of you basically saying that you believe, and this is something that I'm open to, but to say that the Bible, because I've read that recently, as in the last year. Well, I say the New Testament, because the New Testament, Rosie, is all about love, and the letters from Paul, which kind of is the first time that anything like that's made sense to me. So to attribute that to a chap, and I think it kind of, I don't know if it's when you're telling somebody about something that's happened and you begin with a story, so you have these characters, so you involve and everybody's involved and they can relate more to the actual message if it's that. But I find it hard not to associate people as in the characters were real. And I'm using the word characters, aren't we?
Yeah.
But, you know, you feel yourself, you're saying that Michael's of the same mind, obviously, that this is just people that were made up, you know, as in a novel, really.
Mm. Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, if you look at Gospel of Matthew, that tends to start, that refers quite a bit when you look at it. When you're familiar with the first five books of the Old Testament, that's referring back to it. Because somebody said to me, why didn't you do the whole of the Bible? I said, because all the stories in the Bible, Solomon, etc., it's all going back telling you the same thing.
Yeah.
So really, I only had to do the five books. But I think it's, you know, like you say, that it had to stick to what it was on about, but it could have been put into stories to help people along.
And so there was a book that I kind of looked at last year. It's on the internet now. I forgot. It's just gone out of my head. And it was basically, we talked about the mathematics of the wordings as well in the Bible and the numbers, because there's a lot of numbers in there that are all repeated. There's number 7 off the top of my head there. And what kind of, I mean, how does that impact you with what you've written there as well?
Right. Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because numbers are again translated. So you look at the first chapter of Genesis, and you know, along the lines of the world was created, or the universe, whatever, the earth, in 7 days, and off it goes. Now, first, that originated from March, which is to follow, which is to pledge, and day. Was originally, you see, we're working in today's language. A day is like, you know, the sun's out, hopefully. But day was originally half season, and you take that back, and it was a separate ascending vibration to be obeyed. And then you go to second, which is not April, and I'm trying to say, April, that derives from Greek aphros, which means to foam, to bubble. And anyway, it goes back to strength. So you're starting off is when you're translating it, it starts going back to months, and then it starts going back to a meaning. For instance, number 4 started from June, Juno. Again, you get your Jupiter in there. And it was the vital force of life, because you're not classed as alive, into electricity again, until you're connected, you're dead, you're senseless. And so then it goes on the seventh day, seven comes from septum, which goes back to separate. Separate yourself.
Yeah.
Don't keep telling to keep in pledge to that connection, ascend to that connection. That's where you're going to get the vital force, you know, of life from. That when you go to 5, which goes back to the inner voice, the temple, the senses. So it absolutely starts to transform what it's saying. So, and when you look, you know, look at when the, I was just thinking, why does on New Year start in January, yet the tax office and everywhere else, March, April?
Yeah.
That's number one. So, do you see where all this is going? And
yeah,
so you start to translate the numbers. Take the you know, the numbers back. And what it's actually saying in Genesis, because it actually says, and I'll just read you a tiny bit out of this, and I'm hoping I can, because I don't know where my glasses are, but hey. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And it goes on. So in the beginning, in the separation, God, the inner vibration, created the rising and the universe, and the universe was without form and unconceived. And a beholding sense was upon the formation of the underworld, and the spirit of the inner vibration moved upon the face of the waters, the dominion. And the inner vibration said, let there be ascension, light, and there was light. And then it goes along, and God, capital G, so that's the big gaffer, the big boss, divided the light from the darkness, so separated the ascended from the beholden sense. And God, capital G, called the ascension day, a vibration to be obeyed day, and the darkness, beholding sense, he called night. That's where the night comes from, pledge to an overlord. And the evening, the one, and the morn, the ascension, were the pledge to be obeyed. Can you see how this starts to change?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's saying this vibration is there. It's there. And it's still coming over. And it's there everywhere, but we have to separate to it. But when it goes on and on about whales, a whale is a vibration, that's where that comes from. And what it's saying is, you really need to get connected. But it's, as I say, these stories all start to transform. And what it's saying is that this vibration is connecting. It's there. It's the dominant one. Then it goes into the first, second, but day was a vibration to be obeyed. It's been there. It's still there. But it clearly tells us if we're not, we're in torture. Worry is torture. So that's where your numbers come in. They also have to be translated as well. I've gone into the book, you know, with the number 100 and 700, you know, when it says so-and-so lived 710 years, you have to translate the 710. So 710 is actually seven separate. Number 10 is the voice and mind. So they had a live, separate voice and mind. Separate to the underworld, that is.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Rosie.
You're more than welcome.
Appreciate that. Michael?
Rosie, again, thank you very much for your insights. We'd love to have you on again when the book's available and it's out. Absolutely fascinated. Thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. Fantastic.
Lovely. Thank you very much for asking me on.
Thank you. And we'll speak again very, very soon.
Okay then. Well, bye Mick, bye Paul. Bye everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sazmic Books Radio. Putting the world to rights.